This is the Pearson EdXL International GCSE English as a Second Language Paper 2 Listening Test, Summer 2024. This test is in four parts, and you will have to answer questions on what you hear. At the end of each extract, there will be a pause to give you time to read the questions. You will hear all four parts twice. Write your answers in the spaces in your question booklet as you listen. Part 1. Section A. In this section, you will hear five short extracts in which people are talking about their favourite types of books. Read the list of types of books below, then listen to the extracts. For questions 1 to 5, identify which type of book A to H is being described by each speaker by marking a cross for the correct answer. If you change your mind about an answer, put a line through the box and then mark your new answer with a cross. Not all types of books are described, and each may be used more than once. One mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions. Speaker 1.
These are my favourite types of books. I enjoy reading about real people whose lives can teach me and other readers an interesting lesson worth learning. It is not a list of events, but a celebration or a tribute to someone who can be an inspiration to us. My favourite book, Alexander Hamilton, is the true life story of an American hero who lived 200 years ago.
Speaker 2.
Since man's moon landing, this type of story is not unbelievable anymore. I have always found novels about the future of our universe fascinating. Many of these stories are about astronauts who travel through time and space to explore strange new planets. My favourite is called Solaris, which is about a man who travels to a distant planet.
Speaker 3.
This type of book has a gripping plot that revolves around a mystery or crime, which must be solved by the main character. The reader is kept in suspense and challenged to solve the mystery. My favourite is Murder on the Orient Express, which has a clever trail of clues that keep the reader guessing right to the end.
Speaker 4.
Some books are as popular today as they were 100 or more years ago. They often follow a hero's journey through life. The classical hero or heroine comes across many obstacles, difficult and unpleasant situations in their path to happiness. However, they triumph and finally achieve their goal. My favourite classic novel would have to be Jane Eyre.
Speaker 5.
There is a lot of fantasy and magic that I really enjoy in these books. Many are inspired by mythology and folklore. They are set in mysterious places, and strange creatures, both good and evil, inhabit these worlds. My favourite is Lord of the Rings, which is a story of good triumphing over evil.
Now listen a second time and check your answers. Speaker 1.
These are my favourite types of books. I enjoy reading about real people whose lives can teach me and other readers an interesting lesson worth learning. It is not a list of events, but a celebration or a tribute to someone who can be an inspiration to us. My favourite book, Alexander Hamilton, is the true life story of an American hero who lived 200 years ago.
Speaker 2.
Since man's moon landing, this type of story is not unbelievable anymore. I have always found novels about the future of our universe fascinating. Many of these stories are about astronauts who travel through time and space to explore strange new planets. My favourite is called Solaris, which is about a man who travels to a distant planet.
Speaker 3.
This type of book has a gripping plot that revolves around a mystery or crime, which must be solved by the main character. The reader is kept in suspense and challenged to solve the mystery. My favourite is Murder on the Orient Express, which has a clever trail of clues that keep the reader guessing right to the end.
Speaker 4.
Some books are as popular today as they were 100 or more years ago. They often follow a hero's journey through life. The classical hero or heroine comes across many obstacles, difficult and unpleasant situations in their path to happiness. However, they triumph and finally achieve their goal. My favourite classic novel would have to be Jane Eyre.
Speaker 5.
There is a lot of fantasy and magic that I really enjoy in these books. Many are inspired by mythology and folklore. They are set in mysterious places and strange creatures, both good and evil, inhabit these worlds. My favourite is Lord of the Rings, which is a story of good triumphing over evil.
That's the end of Part 1, Section A. Now turn to Part 1, Section B. Section B. In this section, you will hear a short talk about World Book Day. For questions 6 to 10, listen and answer the questions below. Write no more than 3 words for each answer. 1 mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Hello. Our programme today celebrates the joys of reading and also marks World Book Day, when thousands of children across Britain dress up as characters from their favourite books. World Book Day was created over 30 years ago to celebrate books and authors. It is all about changing children's lives by encouraging them to read for pleasure and to make it a habit for life. The World Book Day charity has sent out, through schools, over 1 million vouchers to young people round the country, which they can exchange for a book of their own from a special list of 12 books made up for the occasion. Spending just 10 minutes a day reading and sharing stories with children can make a big difference to their development. On World Book Day, you will see crowds of children dressed up as Harry Potter, Snow White, Superman, and other characters going to school. Once there, they will become involved in various activities, like sharing stories with their friends and classmates. They will take part in sponsored reads, quizzes, storytelling, and even reading out stories they have written for the occasion. This helps to raise funds for children both here in Britain and those living in the poorest communities around the world. The highlight of a World Book Day may be a session of storytelling by a professional storyteller, or possibly a talk and meeting with a famous writer who has come specially to tell their young listeners why they decided to write. However, reading is not just for children, it's for adults as well. The recent growth of book clubs has shown this, with many new ones springing up over the last year, including one which was hosted online by a member of the British royal family. There are many excellent book adaptations for children and adults alike, available both on film and television. Why not read the book and then see the film?
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Hello, our programme today celebrates the joys of reading and also marks World Book Day, when thousands of children across Britain dress up as characters from their favourite books. World Book Day was created over 30 years ago to celebrate books and authors. It is all about changing children's lives by encouraging them to read for pleasure and to make it a habit for life. The World Book Day charity has sent out, through schools, over 1 million vouchers to young people round the country, which they can exchange for a book of their own from a special list of 12 books made up for the occasion. Spending just 10 minutes a day reading and sharing stories with children can make a big difference to their development. On World Book Day, you will see crowds of children dressed up as Harry Potter, Snow White, Superman, and other characters going to school. Once there, they will become involved in various activities, like sharing stories with their friends and classmates. They will take part in sponsored reads, quizzes, storytelling, and even reading out stories they have written for the occasion. This helps to raise funds for children both here in Britain and those living in the poorest communities around the world. The highlight of a World Book Day may be a session of storytelling by a professional storyteller, or possibly a talk and meeting with a famous writer who has come specially to tell their young listeners why they decided to write. However, reading is not just for children, it's for adults as well. The recent growth of book clubs has shown this, with many new ones springing up over the last year, including one which was hosted online by a member of the British royal family. There are many excellent book adaptations for children and adults alike, available both on film and television. Why not read the book and then see the film?
That's the end of part one. Now turn to part two. Part two. In this part, you will hear a talk about shopping in your local area. For questions 11 to 18, listen and complete the notes. Write no more than 3 words for each answer. Questions 19 and 20 must be answered with a cross in a box. If you change your mind about an answer, put a line through the box and then mark your new answer with a cross. 1 mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Hi, it's Gareth Jones here with our weekly shopping programme, which celebrates the local, the sustainable, and the seasonal. A few weeks ago, I decided to travel to an out-of-town retail park to go shopping. I wasted a lot of time, not to mention fuel, stuck in motorway traffic. When I finally got there, I bought lots of money-saving deals that I did not really need, but thought they were a good idea. Sadly, I bought too much, and a lot was thrown away into the recycling or the landfill bins. I could have saved myself a lot of time by going online. This type of shopping is wonderfully convenient and, at the moment, is booming. We can buy everything we need online, from fruit and vegetables, luxury chocolates, to the latest electronic gadgets. However, recent research by a popular bank has shown that, during the last year, there has been a big increase in local shopping, particularly in food specialist stores. People seem to be falling in love with their local shops again. Local businesses are owned and staffed by people who live in and around the area. They have an emotional and financial interest in the community's welfare and future. They are likely to support local schools, charities, and events. When you shop at a local business, you are actually supporting your own community. The unique character of your community is created by its shops and restaurants. Interesting and unique shops contribute to a better quality of life and overall satisfaction with where you live. A town of identical chain stores without any variety is a town without character. In a local community, however, competition is considered to be healthy, and with no control from the head office to worry about, a small business is free to introduce new products and try different ideas. Locally owned businesses tend to buy from other local companies, farms, and market gardeners, many of whom resource their goods sustainably. This has two benefits. Both money and jobs stay local, and there are fewer miles between the producer and the buyer. Food, for example, is fresher. Non-food items such as toys or clothes are original, even unique, often made from local materials and by local artists and craftspeople. Some multinational companies, which are registered abroad, do not pay all their taxes in Britain, even though they make big profits in this country. Local businesses, however, do pay all their taxes in Britain to support the country's economy, as well as benefiting their local area. There are also advantages for consumers. Regular shopping in a local outlet means that the owner and staff will recognise you, get to know you, and remember the things you like to buy. These social gatherings are a part of the shopping experience and are important and enjoyable. Internet pictures are no substitute for touching, seeing, and even tasting the product. You are less likely to make a wrong choice if you've already handled, carefully looked over and tried what you are planning to buy. Also, you won't be restricted to what is on the shelf. If the person behind the counter doesn't have what you want, they can order it for you or offer an alternative. When sitting on the sofa while shopping on the internet, you won't meet your friends. Being out and about means you are likely to meet someone you know. You can stop for a coffee and a chat or arrange to meet. So, what's not to like? It's good for the community, good for the environment, and good for your own well-being. Let's keep our towns and villages alive by shopping locally.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Hi, it's Gareth Jones here with our weekly shopping programme, which celebrates the local, the sustainable, and the seasonal. A few weeks ago, I decided to travel to an out-of-town retail park to go shopping. I wasted a lot of time, not to mention fuel, stuck in motorway traffic. When I finally got there, I bought lots of money-saving deals that I did not really need, but thought they were a good idea. Sadly, I bought too much, and a lot was thrown away into the recycling or the landfill bins. I could have saved myself a lot of time by going online. This type of shopping is wonderfully convenient and, at the moment, is booming. We can buy everything we need online, from fruit and vegetables, luxury chocolates, to the latest electronic gadgets. However, recent research by a popular bank has shown that, during the last year, there has been a big increase in local shopping, particularly in food specialist stores. People seem to be falling in love with their local shops again. Local businesses are owned and staffed by people who live in and around the area. They have an emotional and financial interest in the community's welfare and future. They are likely to support local schools, charities, and events. When you shop at a local business, you are actually supporting your own community. The unique character of your community is created by its shops and restaurants. Interesting and unique shops contribute to a better quality of life and overall satisfaction with where you live. A town of identical chain stores without any variety is a town without character. In a local community, however, competition is considered to be healthy, and with no control from a head office to worry about, a small business is free to introduce new products and try different ideas. Locally owned businesses tend to buy from other local companies, farms, and market gardeners, many of whom resource their goods sustainably. This has two benefits. Both money and jobs stay local, and there are fewer miles between the producer and the buyer. Food, for example, is fresher. Non-food items such as toys or clothes are original, even unique, often made from local materials and by local artists and craftspeople. Some multinational companies, which are registered abroad, do not pay all their taxes in Britain, even though they make big profits in this country. Local businesses, however, do pay all their taxes in Britain to support the country's economy, as well as benefiting their local area. There are also advantages for consumers. Regular shopping in a local outlet means that the owner and staff will recognise you, get to know you, and remember the things you like to buy. These social gatherings are a part of the shopping experience and are important and enjoyable. Internet pictures are no substitute for touching, seeing, and even tasting the product. You are less likely to make a wrong choice if you've already handled, carefully looked over, and tried what you are planning to buy. Also, you won't be restricted to what is on the shelf. If the person behind the counter doesn't have what you want, they can order it for you or offer an alternative. When sitting on the sofa while shopping on the internet, you won't meet your friends. Being out and about means you are likely to meet someone you know. You can stop for a coffee and a chat, or arrange to meet. So, what's not to like? It's good for the community, good for the environment, and good for your own well-being. Let's keep our towns and villages alive by shopping locally.
That's the end of part two. Now turn to part three. Part three. In this part, you will hear a radio interview with a popular television presenter, Kirsty Allsop. For questions 21 to 25, listen and answer the questions. You do not need to write in full sentences. Questions 26 to 30 must be answered with a cross in a box. If you change your mind about an answer, put a line through the box and then mark your new answer with a cross. One mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions. Welcome to the programme, You and Your Community, that today considers how we can help make our outdoor spaces cleaner, safer and greener. We're happy to announce that we'll be once again supporting the Great British Spring Clean campaign to clean up our beaches, beauty spots and streets. Today, we welcome Kirsty Allsop, television presenter, environmental campaigner and the charity's ambassador. Hi Kirsty, and welcome to the programme.
Hello and thank you. I passionately believe that this clean-up campaign is like a great broom that sweeps away rubbish and litter. Over the last 2 years, we've managed to transform many parts of our beautiful countryside and towns, making them cleaner and neater.
Hopefully, as a long-term ambassador of the charity, you can encourage our listeners to join you and others in this campaign. This year, your goal is to achieve 1 million litter-free miles across the country. That's very ambitious, isn't it? I must admit, I'm more than a bit sceptical.
But it's doable. Anyone can get involved. All you need to do is go online, register your name and postcode, as well as your email, and indicate how many minutes or hours of litter picking you will pledge. You can get involved as an individual or as a group. It's easy.
So far, so good. But once you've collected all these miles of rubbish, what then?
Then you count up and photograph the bags you've collected and share your picture with us online using the hashtag LitterHeroes. To help recycling, if possible, separate the litter you find into 3 bags: plastic bottles, cans, and general waste. Your local authority will provide you with refuse bags and special pickers. They will also tell you where to leave your filled bags so they can be collected and disposed of.
Yes, and now that you've told us exactly what to do and how your local authority can help, I'm less doubtful about this litter picking initiative. Now tell me, what got you into litter picking?
Well, a couple of years ago, we were out walking near our home by the seaside when one of my sons saw something in the sand. He ran over to retrieve it and returned very pleased with himself, holding a soaking wet brown leather purse. My older son, who wanted to show he's better than his younger brother, immediately started looking to see what he could find. And before we knew it, we had a competition going. He didn't find another purse, but picked up stones, feathers, and shells. Although none of this really qualified as rubbish, it showed what fun litter picking could be. Not so long ago, they had a huge row when they both spotted an old bicycle wheel and each wanted to claim it as his own.
So this was how you started. From what you've described, I could think of litter picking as a satisfying and worthwhile family activity. I suppose, with younger children, you could even think of it as a sort of treasure hunt. The more unusual things picked up, the better.
Yes, absolutely. That's the idea. I also live with a passionate litter picker. Whenever my husband sees litter on the roadside, he will screech the car to a halt to pick it up and correctly dispose of it. He even brought traffic to a standstill once. Can you imagine the traffic news on the radio that day?
Oh, that's a good story. But joking apart, it means your children have been brought up to keep their environment litter-free. That's marvellous. And I think that we all need to teach our children to take responsibility for where they live from an early age. They need to connect with and want to be proud of not only their area, but the rest of the country.
Oh, absolutely. Not only children, but adults should feel happy and proud of their community. And keeping our streets litter-free is an important part of that. However, I firmly believe that the number one reason for not littering is to safeguard our oceans. There is no filter. You drop a sweet wrapper or a plastic bottle in a gutter, they end up in the sea. If we do not protect our oceans, we are putting not only animals, but ourselves in danger of extinction.
Oh, you're right. I think it's quite scary when you look at it that way.
That's why I'm not only backing, but I'm the ambassador for this year's Great British Spring Clean campaign, to encourage people, their friends and families, to go out and do their bit for the community. You don't have to start in a big way. It's incredible what can be achieved on your own or on a family walk. Why not start today?
Well, Kirsty, you make a very enthusiastic ambassador for the charity. So, listeners, just think how you can help to keep Britain tidy. Everywhere you go nowadays, there is never a lack of discarded items to pick up, whether in cities, on beaches, climbing up mountains, or walking in the countryside. Your support can ultimately change our world and your little corner of it for the better. Kirsty, is there any practical advice you can give us?
Yes, absolutely. Use a litter picker. But most importantly, wear strong, heavy-duty gloves that will not tear easily. You should also wear suitable clothing that will cover your arms and legs. Carry hand sanitizer. And once back home, wash your hands thoroughly.
Thanks for coming to talk about the charity. We wish you every success with your campaign.
And thank you for letting me come and discuss a subject that I feel strongly about.
So, listeners, want to do something simple yet worthwhile? Start litter picking. Now listen a second time and check your answers. Welcome to the programme, You and Your Community, that today considers how we can help make our outdoor spaces cleaner, safer and greener. We're happy to announce that we'll be once again supporting the Great British Spring Clean campaign to clean up our beaches, beauty spots and streets. Today, we welcome Kirsty Allsop, television presenter, environmental campaigner and the charity's ambassador. Hi Kirsty, and welcome to the programme.
Hello and thank you. I passionately believe that this clean-up campaign is like a great broom that sweeps away rubbish and litter. Over the last 2 years, we've managed to transform many parts of our beautiful countryside and towns, making them cleaner and neater.
Hopefully, as a long-term ambassador of the charity, you can encourage our listeners to join you and others in this campaign. This year, your goal is to achieve 1 million litter-free miles across the country. That's very ambitious, isn't it? I must admit, I'm more than a bit sceptical.
But it's doable. Anyone can get involved. All you need to do is go online, register your name and postcode, as well as your email, and indicate how many minutes or hours of litter picking you will pledge. You can get involved as an individual or as a group. It's easy.
So far, so good. But once you've collected all these miles of rubbish, what then?
Then you count up and photograph the bags you've collected. And share your picture with us online using the hashtag LitterHeroes. To help recycling, if possible, separate the litter you find into 3 bags: plastic bottles, cans, and general waste. Your local authority will provide you with refuse bags and special pickers. They will also tell you where to leave your filled bags so they can be collected and disposed of.
Yes, and now that you've told us exactly what to do and how your local authority can help, I'm less doubtful about this litter-picking initiative. Now tell me, what got you into litter-picking?
Well, a couple of years ago, we were out walking near our home by the seaside when one of my sons saw something in the sand. He ran over to retrieve it and returned very pleased with himself, holding a soaking wet brown leather purse. My older son, who wanted to show he's better than his younger brother, immediately started looking to see what he could find. And before we knew it, we had a competition going. He didn't find another purse, but picked up stones, feathers, and shells. Although none of this really qualified as rubbish, it showed what fun litter picking could be. Not so long ago, they had a huge row when they both spotted an old bicycle wheel, and each wanted to claim it as his own.
So this was how you started? From what you've described, I could think of litter picking as a satisfying and worthwhile family activity. I suppose, with younger children, you could even think of it as a sort of treasure hunt. The more unusual things picked up, the better.
Yes, absolutely. That's the idea. I also live with a passionate litter picker. Whenever my husband sees litter on the roadside, he will screech the car to a halt to pick it up and correctly dispose of it. He even brought traffic to a standstill once. Can you imagine the traffic news on the radio that day?
Oh, that's a good story. But joking apart, it means your children have been brought up to keep their environment litter-free. That's marvellous. And I think that we all need to teach our children to take responsibility for where they live from an early age. They need to connect with and want to be proud of not only their area, but the rest of the country.
Oh, absolutely. Not only children, but adults should feel happy and proud of their community. And keeping our streets litter-free is an important part of that. However, I firmly believe that the number one reason for not littering is to safeguard our oceans. There is no filter. You drop a sweet wrapper or a plastic bottle in a gutter, they end up in the sea. If we do not protect our oceans, we are putting not only animals, but ourselves in danger of extinction.
Oh, you're right. I think it's quite scary when you look at it that way.
That's why I'm not only backing, but I'm the ambassador for this year's Great British Spring Clean campaign, to encourage people, their friends and families, to go out and do their bit for the community. You don't have to start in a big way. It's incredible what can be achieved on your own or on a family walk. Why not start today?
Well, Kirsty, you make a very enthusiastic ambassador for the charity. So, listeners, just think how you can help to keep Britain tidy. Everywhere you go nowadays, there is never a lack of discarded items to pick up, whether in cities, on beaches, climbing up mountains, or walking in the countryside. Your support can ultimately change our world and your little corner of it for the better. Kirsty, is there any practical advice you can give us?
Yes, absolutely. Use a litter picker. But most importantly, wear strong, heavy-duty gloves that will not tear easily. You should also wear suitable clothing that will cover your arms and legs. Carry hand sanitizer. And once back home, wash your hands thoroughly.
Thanks for coming to talk about the charity. We wish you every success with your campaign.
And thank you for letting me come and discuss a subject that I feel strongly about.
So, listeners, want to do something simple yet worthwhile? Start litter picking. That's the end of part 3. Now turn to part 4. Part 4. In this part, you will hear a podcast on how diet affects your well-being. For questions 31 to 33 and 38 to 40, listen and complete the sentences below. Write no more than 3 words for each answer. For questions 34 to 37, complete the table. Write no more than 3 words for each answer. 1 mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Nutritionists and psychologists both agree that your diet can affect your mental well-being. So, in our podcast Eat to Feel Good, We have put together tips and ideas to help boost everything from memory to mood. Your brain might only take up 2% of your body weight, but it uses a staggering 20% of your energy. That is more than any other organ in your body. So, it makes sense that what you eat and drink could have a huge impact on how well your brain works. A good healthy diet helps you to remember what you did a few days ago, improves your concentration, helps you to cope with work deadlines, and makes you feel less stressed if things don't work out as you had planned. As well as improving your memory and the way you think and work out problems, a good healthy diet, high in fresh fruit and vegetables, nuts, grains and fish that are rich in omega-3, can make you feel happier. Eating well can also be good for your family budget, particularly if you have time to cook from fresh and plan meals using ingredients for more than one dish. A great place to start improving your diet is to plan your meals in advance. Many supermarkets now offer, both online and in the form of free recipe leaflets, ideas and inspiration for meals that are within your family budget. Research into how nutrition affects the way you feel is recent, with one of the most important trials being done in Australia in 2017. The SMILES trial was one of the first studies in which the participants were asked to consider, if I improve my diet, will my mood improve? In the study of a group of people with very poor diets, half were given nutritional advice and healthy meal plans, while the other half kept to their original eating habits. After 12 weeks, researchers found that those who had followed the dietitian's advice were more likely to feel better physically and be in happier, more positive moods than those who had kept to their old diets. But what exactly do scientists mean when they talk about a healthy and happy brain? One psychologist explained that it is about your brain being reliable and able to cope with various issues. If you don't have that feeling, your brain starts producing feelings of anxiety about how to deal with your relationships and your work life. Fiber-rich foods, such as pulses and whole grains, are crucial as they support good gut health, which helps the immune system. As dried pulses are among the cheapest foods on the supermarket shelf, using them to supplement your meals makes very good sense. Regular consumption of oily fish is also important, as fish, like salmon and herring, contain brain-boosting omega-3, or fatty acids, which the human body does not produce naturally. For vegetarians and vegans, good sources of omega-3 include nuts, seeds, and edamame beans. Eating a handful of green leafy vegetables each day could also make a huge difference. A recent study of elderly people has shown that those who ate leafy greens every day had much younger and more active brains than those who didn't. According to National Health Service guidelines, frozen fruit and vegetables are just as healthy as fresh ones. They are also economical. You use just what you need and leave the rest in the freezer, to be used in another dish that you may want to make more nutritious. Frozen berries are great value and a healthy addition to desserts, breakfast options, and smoothies. Taking the stress out of food choices is key to making positive changes. A protein-based breakfast will keep you satisfied throughout the morning. It need not be much more than baked beans on a piece of wholemeal toast. Eating to boost your mood is easy. In the SMILES study, participants didn't totally give up their old diets. They just tried ones which had more variety. They were encouraged to see what they could add to their diet, rather than focusing on what they should take away. The scientists involved argued that when it comes to brain health, the more diversity in your diet, the greater range of nutrients you are getting. And finally, to the important issue of drinking more water. Studies have shown that even if you are just 1% dehydrated, it negatively affects how well the brain works. Dehydration can lead to headaches, feelings of tiredness, and a lack of concentration. The British Nutrition Foundation advises that you drink 6 to 8 glasses of fluids a day if you want to have a happy and healthy brain. If you find water boring, you could try flavouring it with cordials, fruit slices, or frozen berries. If you like tea or coffee, try switching to decaffeinated. or try a herbal option. However, you should think beyond what you eat and drink, important though it is. Try getting up 20 minutes earlier, so that you have time for breakfast, and to have a walk before going to work. Or, in the evening, go to bed half an hour earlier and switch off your mobile phone for the night. All of these things can help improve your mood. For a healthy and happy brain, and for a positive feeling overall, embrace a wider variety of foods, enjoy more relaxing activities, and learn to rest more. And who doesn't fancy that?
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Nutritionists and psychologists both agree that your diet can affect your mental well-being. So, in our podcast Eat to Feel Good, we have put together tips and ideas to help boost everything from memory to mood. Your brain might only take up 2% of your body weight, but it uses a staggering 20% of your energy. That is more than any other organ in your body. So, it makes sense that what you eat and drink could have a huge impact on how well your brain works. A good healthy diet helps you to remember what you did a few days ago, improves your concentration, helps you to cope with work deadlines, and makes you feel less stressed if things don't work out as you had planned. As well as improving your memory and the way you think and work out problems, a good healthy diet, high in fresh fruit and vegetables, nuts, grains and fish that are rich in omega-3, can make you feel happier. Eating well can also be good for your family budget, particularly if you have time to cook from fresh and plan meals using ingredients for more than one dish. A great place to start improving your diet is to plan your meals in advance. Many supermarkets now offer, both online and in the form of free recipe leaflets, ideas and inspiration for meals that are within your family budget. Research into how nutrition affects the way you feel is recent, with one of the most important trials being done in Australia in 2017. The SMILES trial was one of the first studies in which the participants were asked to consider, if I improve my diet, will my mood improve? In the study of a group of people with very poor diets, half were given nutritional advice and healthy meal plans, while the other half kept to their original eating habits. After 12 weeks, researchers found that those who had followed the dietitian's advice were more likely to feel better physically and be in happier, more positive moods than those who had kept to their old diets. But what exactly do scientists mean when they talk about a healthy and happy brain? One psychologist explained that it is about your brain being reliable and able to cope with various issues. If you don't have that feeling, your brain starts producing feelings of anxiety about how to deal with your relationships and your work life. Fiber-rich foods, such as pulses and whole grains, are crucial as they support good gut health, which helps the immune system. As dried pulses are among the cheapest foods on the supermarket shelf, using them to supplement your meals makes very good sense. Regular consumption of oily fish is also important, as fish, like salmon and herring, contain brain-boosting omega-3, or fatty acids, which the human body does not produce naturally. For vegetarians and vegans, good sources of omega-3 include nuts, seeds, and edamame beans. Eating a handful of green leafy vegetables each day could also make a huge difference. A recent study of elderly people has shown that those who ate leafy greens every day had much younger and more active brains than those who didn't. According to National Health Service guidelines, frozen fruit and vegetables are just as healthy as fresh ones. They are also economical. You use just what you need and leave the rest in the freezer, to be used in another dish that you may want to make more nutritious. Frozen berries are great value and a healthy addition to desserts, breakfast options, and smoothies. Taking the stress out of food choices is key to making positive changes. A protein-based breakfast will keep you satisfied throughout the morning. It need not be much more than baked beans on a piece of wholemeal toast. Eating to boost your mood is easy. In the SMILES study, participants didn't totally give up their old diets, They just tried ones which had more variety. They were encouraged to see what they could add to their diet, rather than focusing on what they should take away. The scientists involved argued that when it comes to brain health, the more diversity in your diet, the greater range of nutrients you are getting. And finally, to the important issue of drinking more water. Studies have shown that even if you are just 1% dehydrated, it negatively affects how well the brain works. Dehydration can lead to headaches, feelings of tiredness, and a lack of concentration. The British Nutrition Foundation advises that you drink 6 to 8 glasses of fluids a day if you want to have a happy and healthy brain. If you find water boring, you could try flavouring it with cordials, fruit slices, or frozen berries. If you like tea or coffee, try switching to decaffeinated, or try a herbal option. However, you should think beyond what you eat and drink, important though it is. Try getting up 20 minutes earlier, so that you have time for breakfast, and to have a walk before going to work. Or, in the evening, go to bed 30 minutes earlier and switch off your mobile phone for the night. All of these things can help improve your mood. For a healthy and happy brain, and for a positive feeling overall, embrace a wider variety of foods, enjoy more relaxing activities, and learn to rest more. And who doesn't fancy that?
That is the end of the test. Please wait for your question booklet to be collected. Thank you, and good luck.